On Tuesday, July 16th, we took a closer look at the Jeffrey Epstein case. We also spoke to a Fairfield County woman about how she got behind a new law recently signed by Governor Ned Lamont to help folks deal with opioid addictions and their insurance coverage. And we wrapped up the show talking to a Danbury hockey coach and police officer who's become a viral sensation.
With Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
And for that, we thank you over and over and over again. Tell your folks about it. That's right. A lot more folks realize now that live local telephone talk is back Monday through Friday. The kind auspices of Connoisseur Media here at WICC 600 online, WICC600.com. It is Connecticut Today. We're with you Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. We do appreciate you stopping by. Our next guest is reporter Daniel Greenfield, and he's been looking into this, a whole Jeffrey Epstein thing, and this has, of course, you know, spawned discussions about child sex trafficking. It's all over the country. We talked about it here in Connecticut. But a lot of folks keep scratching their heads about how was this guy able to get such a relatively easy sentence back about 20 years ago when everybody knew he was a dirtbag back then, kind of the R. Kelly thing going on. I mean, everybody knew he was a dirtbag back then, too, but his record company protected him. Who protected Jeffrey Epstein? And Daniel Greenfield joins us right now, writer for Front Page Magazine. Dan, Paul here in Connecticut. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Not too bad. Well, you know, this guy, Jeff Epstein, Dan, it's just, this is bizarre upon bizarre. This guy was a deviant back then. We knew that, you know, 2001, 2002, 2003, yet he got an incredibly light sentence or what seemed to be a slap on the wrist. What's your theory on this?
Really, he didn't even get a sentence. If you actually look at what happened, he received a 13-month sentence for soliciting prostitution despite abusing underage girls. He didn't actually spend the time in prison so much as he had a private wing in the Palm Beach stockade. He was able to go on work release from that so-called prison every single day to his office. He hired Palm Beach sheriff's deputies as his escorts. They called him a client, not an inmate. They stood outside. He went to his office, and we now know he was being serviced by girls, women, again, in that office while the Palm Beach sheriff's deputies acted as security. And all this comes down to local corruption. It comes down to the decisions made within Palm Beach but way before the feds got involved.
Okay, so let's take us then back, Daniel, to before the feds got involved and people started to sniff around and they knew or they alleged what Jeff Epstein was doing.
So the ultimate responsibility goes to a guy named Barry Krischer, who was the chief prosecutor in Palm Beach. The feds only got involved because the Palm Beach cops, the detective on the case, the chief of police, I think that's the very likely answer, and I don't think we'll really ever hear the full truth of that because at some point these people just became permanently embedded.
Yeah, and again, Daniel, it's wild. You had Mr. Clinton's office come out. I think it was literally, you know, the same day he was arrested, maybe early the next day, saying, well, I knew him, but I only flew on the plane twice or three times. And then I think it was Fox and some other outlets uncovered the FAA flight manifest, and they say he was on the plane 22 times, and you have had nary a peep on this, again, out of any other of the major networks or newspapers.
It's bizarre, especially because the flight logs had already been revealed years and years ago. Bill Clinton, his people came out with this lie that was a very stupid lie because the flight logs had been made public long before when there was original interest in the Epstein case. So he's coming out with a lie that's easily disproven and that the media is not even going to bother challenging. And that really says something about just how the media is part of the problem. The media refused to properly cover this. Back in the day, now they're suddenly touting their own investigative skills. They're not actually turning up anything that wasn't known back then. They just chose to bury the story.
Daniel Greenfield, reporter for Front Page Magazine. Daniel, thank you. We'll have you on again. We'll look forward to your more reportage on this. Thank you. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Folks, that's a bizarre thing in this case. That's the thing nobody can figure out. Think about this. And that is Yes. It's things like this that make me wonder what people in my business, our business, the radio, the media, TV, newspapers, what they're doing here. Again, like Daniel Greenfield said, and I again liken it to what you're seeing now in the R. Kelly case. People knew this guy was a dirtbag 20 years ago. The evidence was there. The evidence of R. Kelly's, R. Kelly's victims being paid off. And years ago, you had this Epstein thing bubbling up. And, of course, you had people saying, oh, come on, you're just anti-Clinton. This is one of those right-wing smear things. He was never on that plane. I mean, think about it. And no, and there's a collective, you know. And again, I look at, and I hate double standards. One thing in media, and I do proudly still call myself a journalist, a reporter. Now, what I do here is opinion. I get that. You don't have to call me and say, well, you're not being fair. No, no. This, in this scenario, it's opinion. In my past life and in part of my current life still, it's reportage. I'm a reporter. But I can't stand the double standard here. I mean, why do you think? I mean, seriously, if you have a theory on this, I'd love to hear it. 203-333-9422. Why do you think that there is this, I don't know how to put it, fear? There's this fear and loathing. There's this almost kind of a hidden rule that you can't go after the Clinton. I mean, I know they went after them with Whitewater and with Hillary's emails. But man, oh man. He came out a day after and said, nah, he was only on the plane a couple of times. And there are FAA manifests from 18, 19, 15 years ago, right? Nobody's disputing that, saying he was on the plane 22 times. And everybody's going, but Trump, Trump knew him. Trump, Trump. Okay, yeah, Donald Trump did know him. And you have to question whether or not the president undertook any sort of, you know, bad conduct with him. Was there any criminality? But you mentioned Bill Clinton. Ah, yeah, whatever, Clinton, yeah, yeah, yeah. What's wrong with this picture? What's wrong with this picture? Man, you know, I got to tell you something. People say nothing sticks to President Trump. He's Teflon. People called Reagan the Teflon president. Man, I got to tell you, Bill Clinton is shielded in 9 layers of Teflon. Hey, let me tell you something. Nobody wears Teflon better than Bubba. I don't know if you remember. And Aaron, you obviously were a youngin. 1994, I think. A woman went on national television. Now think of all the insinuations with President Trump. A woman named Juanita Broderick. If you folks remember this. Juanita Broderick went on national television. I think NBC did a segment with her. She charged President Clinton at the time, not at the time, but said years before. She charged him with raping her. Rape. And she gave a pretty detailed explanation of it, too, saying how he bit her lip. Said something about going to put some ice on that or something like that. And he just, whatever. It just, there's something about Bubba. Bubba's got 4 layers of Teflon. You forgot about Juanita Broderick, huh? Yeah, Aaron's looking it up now going, Aaron's got those cartoon eyes now going, yeah, huh? About Bubba, huh? Drug addiction, deadly drug addiction, and mental health coverage. And joining us right now is a prominent woman in Lower Fairfield County. She was a former state treasurer candidate, Dita Bargava, and she was instrumental in helping get a key bill passed that I had known was in the hopper, but I lost track of it. And it's good to see that it was passed and signed by Governor Ned Lamont a few days ago. Dita, thanks for joining us. Paul here. How are you?
Hi, Paul. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I am good. You have felt the ultimate pain of what drug addiction and opioid addiction can do. Unfortunately, your son Alec died from a fentanyl overdose in 2018. My sympathies, and I can just imagine what that must have been like for you and your family to go through.
Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. And it is devastation that I know many families have felt, but one that you never really get over for the rest of our lives. We won't. And you're right, he died in 2018. In fact, this past Saturday was the one-year mark of when he passed away. He died on his 26th birthday, and it was tragic. Tragic, especially because he was so committed to committed to sobriety and wanted nothing else but to lead a spiritual life filled with the love of his friends and family. And he died of a fentanyl overdose. He made a mistake. In his head, it was probably that one last time. He died with a package of Narcan right by his bedside, but he was alone, so nobody could save him. But I have spent pretty much every day since, and actually for years before that, just really advocating for the urgency of addressing the opioid crisis that both our state is facing and our country is facing, and it's grown to epic levels. It is probably one of the worst public health crises that that our country has faced in my lifetime, at least.
You hosted forums, discussions, Dita, and you got behind a bill that was signed by Governor Lamont a few days ago. Tell folks about that, because again, you know, we were so entrenched in the discussion about marijuana and tolls and taxes and all this, but legislation like this that's really important to people, can touch their lives, is often not given the spotlight.
Absolutely, and yes, I was very proud to be part of that movement to try and get mental health parity bill signed into law. I know there have been advocates of that particular bill that have been working on this for several years, and I commend Governor Lamont for really signing that bill very easily. It wasn't an easy point to get to. We have big insurance companies in our state that, of course, had their concerns about such a bill, but it is absolutely necessary. And I can say that not only from a standpoint of just looking at facts, mm-hmm. but also from a personal standpoint. You know, my son went through close to 10 rounds of treatment with various treatment centers, and every round we faced the same challenge of having insurance approve his treatment was always only partially covered. It was never covered for more than 28 days in the full capacity, and we know that opioid addiction, it's a lifelong illness, mm-hmm. but it takes at least a year of being off of opioids to really reset the wirings in one's brain. So 28 days just doesn't cut it, which is why there's always multiple rounds of folks coming back in for treatment. So mental health and substance abuse parity has been made into law both at the federal level and at the state level many, many years ago, but the insurance companies were not really following the protocol of treating it the same way that they would any other disease. And so this is a great first step in putting the onus on insurance companies to show that they are indeed covering mental health and substance abuse disorder the same way they would any other disease.
So specifically, Dita, with the bill, they now have to document, is it in writing to you, to family members, to the state, that they are actually doing what they said they would do regarding mental health treatment?
Right. So the bill itself, starting in 2021, the insurance providers will have to submit annual reports that will detail their coverage of mental health and substance abuse services. And so that, you know, it's really a more transparent model that then will be reviewed by, you know, our commissioner of insurance, in our, you know, mental health services, and so that they can then make the analysis that they are indeed covering, you know, these illnesses in a fair way that they would any other. It's a good first bill, but I think there's a lot of work to be done on it. There are no penalties at this point, which, we know that dollars always, unfortunately, companies are led by bottom line dollar signs. I think there should be penalties for not following. This illness is way too serious for it not to be treated as such. And I do believe that when you're breaking the law and you're not, as a company, insurance company, you're not covering mental illness and substance abuse like you would cancer or any other disease, that you're breaking the law, and it's a critical law that you're breaking because it could mean the difference between life and death. So I'd like to see an enhanced version, but it's a good first step.
Were the big insurance companies, Dita, were they actively pushing back on this?
Yes, well, you know, the insurance companies do have a strong lobbying arm in our state and really across the country, but certainly in Connecticut, and yes, they were. The original form was a much more comprehensive bill, and there was a lot of negotiation to get to this point. Yes, they were pushing back, and I assume that they will continue to do that, but we can't, we also need to continue as public advocates and as families who have lost loved ones or as families who are now have loved ones in the system of trying to get medical help for these diseases, we have to continue to push forward to make sure that they are being treated. Look, my family was fortunate enough that we actually were able to afford to keep our son in treatment, but we know that is by far not the case for most families. So most families who don't have private insurance or who have limited private insurance, they have nowhere else to go. So there's a lot of work to be done in access to treatment, and this is a step.
So finally, Dita, what should people know now? If they're in your position or another position of needing mental health coverage for themselves or for their or for their loved ones, what should they know now going forward about what this bill would do to maybe, you know, make the insurance companies a little more honest and upfront here?
So, look, I think that families are at a loss. I know my family was at a loss. This is a very complicated and often insidious disease, addiction disease, and there are, unfortunately, no set of right answers for any person who's suffering from the disease, and everyone's addiction is different from the next. Mm-hmm. But that being said, the state of Connecticut is trying to put resources out there for folks to really understand what their options are. A good place to start is on the website of the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, the DMIS website, which is a government website where you can look at what public options are available, what beds are available. If you are suffering with addiction and you are addicted to opioids, a list of sober homes that people can access if they need. So that, you know, having the right information is critical, because honestly, when you are dealing with a family, a loved one who suffers from this disease, it's a crisis. And you mentioned fentanyl. My son overdosed on fentanyl. You know, fentanyl on the streets is really a crisis within the crisis, where now, especially in the state of Connecticut, you know, we're one of the top 10 worst states in terms of per capita death. Yeah. Almost over 70% of those who die of overdose in our state are overdosing on fentanyl because they don't necessarily know it's in the substance that they have bought off the streets, which was the case for my son. So this bill is a great start. We also had a couple of other bills passed this session that I had been talking about in those roundtables, mm-hmm. and I will continue to conduct those roundtables. So I welcome anybody from the public to join. It's a great place to educate yourself. We've also added Narcan training to those and distribution to those roundtables. But there was a bill that would increase penalties for drug traffickers mm-hmm. Of fentanyl, which I think is important because if a trafficker is knowingly selling an illicit compound that they know could very well kill the user, as it did with my son, then, you know, in some could say that is involuntary manslaughter. So we've got to
absolutely. Dita, thank you. Dita Bargava, you may recognize the name. She was a former state treasurer candidate in Fairfield County, but fought another battle with her family's encounter, unfortunately, with a deadly drug, and now behind various bills to make the penalties stiffer and also to make sure the insurance companies are doing what they should. Dita, thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Thank you so much, Paul. And just quickly, if anybody wants to learn more, shatterproof.org is an organization that I'm an ambassador for, and there's a ton of information on their website as well. Thank you so much, Paul.
Thanks, Dita. Shatterproof.org. Yeah, we're back at it. We are at, 5:07, 7 past 5 o'clock right here on WICC 600 online at WICC600.com. Well, the Danbury Hat Tricks are a new hockey team in the Federal Hockey League. Now, their schedule, they don't kick off the regular season till the fourth week in October. However, they're making news for one other reason.
Hey, guys, listen up for a second. First day of camp. Something really important. Okay, we're not women's soccer. We're not the NFL. If there's anybody here that's going to be disrespectful to either the American or the Canadian national anthem, grab your gear and get the f*** out now, because you'll never see the ice in this arena. We don't have that problem in hockey. We're better than that. But there was no sense in wasting anybody's time if that was going to happen. I don't believe it would happen here. We're the most patriotic sport that they have out there. So just keep that in mind. Thank you.
Don't look at me. I'm not going to do it. Joining us right now is the guy that uttered that little soliloquy there that has now gone viral. That's one of the assistant coaches of the Danbury Club, Sergeant, Police Sergeant in Danbury, John Krupinski. Sergeant, how are you? Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Good, Paul. How are you? Thank you for having me here.
Oh, listen, Sarge, it's been a pleasure. But, you know, when I first saw that on my Facebook feed, I shared it, and I didn't know who you were. And a friend of mine in the local hockey community, he messages me back 5 minutes later and goes, I know that guy. And I said, who is that? And he said, well, he's a Danbury police officer and he's the assistant coach of this new team. Did you have any idea, any thought with social media that would go literally nationwide the way it did?
No, I probably wouldn't have posted it. I thought this is something that's going to be shared. Just like you said, your buddy down, you know, in Bridgeport, this will get bounced around, you know, the men's league teams, hockey arenas. Basically, my buddies, no idea that we'd be over 20 million hits on different various social networks.
20 million. Is that what it is up? I tried to find a counter today. You're up to 20 million hits.
Yeah, it's a little difficult to calculate now because we were initially going by the Facebook because it was posted on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, that was the only place you could see it. And Facebook, the last count on Facebook that I've been able to verify was 8.5 million. However, when my Twitter account was shut down because instead of activity, it trended 2 days on Twitter where it was trending.
Yeah.
So when you open it up, you know, you were seeing it. So it's really unknown how many views on Twitter, because if you opened it up, it was right there. And then the other day, my wife was in the other room and I heard her scream and I said, hey, what's going on? When you opened up Google, it was the first thing trending on Google. So if you were going to do a Google search, my photo came up first there. So people were able to view those videos in a lot of different places. And then every TV show that's had it on now, mm-hmm. you know, most all of them have their own either, yeah. you know, network links that you can click to. So best figure we can estimate is, I don't know, somewhere around 20 million now.
You obviously said, and obviously it's not the regular season. These are the off-season workouts, tryouts. You're putting your roster together for the coming in. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it can't be hockey season soon enough. But you did that. You laid out some ground rules, John. And that's the big debate now we're having here, whether it's the NFL, whether it's women's soccer. The idea, John, of what is to be expected, not digging into your constitutional rights, but when you put a uniform on.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple. When you're there with your jersey on, you're part of a team. Teams are expected to be a team all the time. You can't have distractions. I'm violating one of my biggest rules right now, no distractions.
Yeah,
I'm glad that this is this early. I don't want any of this stuff during the season
because
it'd be a distraction. But it's pretty simple. Like we were here now. Those kids there, they're trying to come to camp. We have three camps. We have a camp that was in June. That was June 29th. Mm-hmm. We have a camp coming August 28 and 29. And then we have main camp in October just before we'll make our final cuts. There's a lot of kids that want to come and want to play pro hockey. And it makes no sense to me to waste my time. You know, somebody might be a great skilled player if there was going to be any issue to look at a kid when I'm not looking at the kid standing next to him and playing if there was not going to be there. But I do want to clarify. I said it in the video. We don't have this problem in hockey. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it hurts for coaches to reinforce it.
You know, John, and we're talking with Danbury Police Sergeant John Krupinski, who was, as you heard, millions of people now have seen that video with him laying out the ground rules. You know, and other things I read, John, you are in no way some totalitarian here. You're not against anybody's right to, you know, a peaceful protest and to do what they believe in, correct?
Not at all. They could protest 1 second after that anthem or up to 1 second before. I was strictly, you know, one thing I want to clarify, because again, you know, once this thing gets out there, 20 million opinions are floating around. This is not a left or right thing. It's not a Republican or Democrat thing. It's not a black or white thing. This is strictly an anthem thing. And a lot of people miss that I said the Canadian national anthem too, because I expect my American players to be just as attentive through the Canadian national anthem and show the respect for the player to their left or to their right that is shown to them previously. And that's really all I was talking about. You know, it's got bounced around and a lot more things read into it. But in a nutshell, that's what it was about. Give me, you're an employee. Give me 2 minutes respect while that anthem is playing, and that's it. I don't think that's too much to ask for anybody.
No, John, and this is the debate I have with people all the time. I said, you have to understand, these guys, this isn't college hockey or you know, a high school. These guys are professional athletes playing for a new, you know, professional team in the area, which is great. And frankly, John, and you've probably been talked about this with your guys on the police department and in athletics, your ability to protest, your freedom of speech, when you're working, when you have a uniform on, just the way you have your police uniform on, there are certain things that you just cannot do, and an employer can set limits.
That's about as clear as it can be explained, and that's correct. You know, I didn't have any pushback from these guys, nor did I expect any. Mm-hmm. What's sad to me is this debate across America, whether or not you have to respect your national anthem. Like, fourth graders understand that? Why are we having this debate? And when you have talked to people, my family's from Brazil. You talk to people from other countries and they don't understand why wouldn't a player respect their national anthem?
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes we see, obviously now you guys must be involved in it. We see this debate. I mean, to me, it's pretty common sense.
John, I would imagine you've gotten some blowback on this. Have you gotten, you know, nasty emails, nasty comments? Who the hell does this guy think he is? That sort of stuff?
Yeah, but it's been very, very minimal, extremely minimal. And I'll tell you what, you know, I think it's important. I've answered every single email,
wow,
Facebook message, text message that's come in, good or bad. If I probably answered, I would say somewhere maybe around 30 to 40 now, maybe 50
yeah,
of people that didn't agree with it. And I always simply just, if you're going to talk about respect, you also have to give respect. You know, I answer them with, hey, I'm sorry you feel that way, and that's your opinion. Thank you very much, and that's it. But the pushback has been very, very, very minimal. I'm receiving all kinds of mail and cards. Most of the stuff that I'm receiving on the positive side appear to be from old-time veterans, Korean War veterans, Vietnam veterans, people of that stature. And, you know, hey, they're the inspiration for that, so well-deserving on their part.
Absolutely. And John, how does your role as a coach here meld with what you've been doing for years in Danbury? You're a very prominent member of the Danbury PD. You're out there. I know you interact with youth. You've done a lot of charitable stuff. How does that all weave in together, do you think, in your life?
It's, you know, one, my coaching job is separate than my work job. But then when you start throwing the kids in, it all weaves in together.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very fortunate to have awesome bosses. Some of the things that I've asked, you know, and well before this, we've done it already in the past. So it's not running around trying to pander to media. I asked the bosses, hey, can we, you know, get free tickets for the kids that are less fortunate that might not ever get to see a hockey game? We've done that. And he again reiterated that the hat tricks will be no different, that if I want to bring, you know, children in. Actually, today we had some DCF people in today, and we're going to make some tickets available and sponsorship with them.
So it looks
it's a avenue for me to also break the ice with some parts of the community.
Well, yeah, it looks like John, the end of this, and I'm sure the hits will go on for a couple of months. But boy, this has really worked out well for you and for the team and for the community involvement there in Danbury.
Yeah, if you would ask me, is there anything negative to this? I'd have to say no. Other than I'm losing a lot of money on overtime because I've been busy doing other things. But that's about the only negative part. No, it's been very, very well for the team. We sold out of every hat, jersey, T-shirt, everything that we had. One thing that I'm impressed with that I'm really happy, and again, and I got a hats off to my bosses. And you know, listen, we got a great owners group there, the Diamond Group and Herm Sorcher, my boss. Mm-hmm. They have been so supportive of this through the whole thing that, what I said, if our team wanted to protest, if my guys came in and said, Coach, we want to go to a protest, you know, they're having it in Hartford today about whatever the topic is, they said, Johnny, we'd give them the team bus to go. That's not a problem. We're not ever saying somebody can't protest. What we're saying is, when the national anthem is playing, we just want you to show some respect to it. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. There's nobody's losing their First Amendment rights or anything else. And because I have a good owners group, all of these things that these players want is on the table. And, hey, it's going to be a great year of hockey because we're going to be doing a lot of other things there at the arena. So I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Fabulous, John. I may have to come out and see you, buddy. Sergeant John Kropinski, assistant coach of the Danbury Hattricks, new team in the Federal League. They're going to be playing at the Danbury Ice Arena. Go check them out. But this guy's instruction, shall we say, about 40 seconds of showing respect to the U.S. and Canadian national anthems is a viral sensation. John, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. We know you're busy. I'm not going to let you lose any more overtime, so we'll talk down the road. Thanks, John.
Guys, thank you for having me.
Appreciate
God
it.
God bless America.